beautiful East Tennessee in the foothills of the Smoky Mountains. You are listening to the Sherry Voluntary Show, and we sure appreciate you taking your time to spend with us today. You're going to really love our guest, and many of you, I'm sure, are already familiar with his work. Mance is the host of the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast, which is a really fantastic show, and also the author of two books. From 2017, Mance released Freedom Through Memedom, the 31-Day Guide to Waking Up to Liberty. And also, it reached number 4 on the libertarian section of Amazon.com. And then he has a new book. I think it's only been, 5 months later that you released.
Yeah. 2 books in 6 months.
That's a lot. That's a lot. The Kids Are Not All Right, a meme-inspired primer on encroaching Marxism in the West. And that was released in April of this year and was number 1 new release in 4 categories on Amazon, correct? Yeah. So
I even got the communism section.
Yeah. Oh. That's great. Yeah, I love the name of that book too, because I love that song by Cheap Trick. So it's great. Maybe I'm just old, and that's why it. You know, a lot of people are like, "Wonder what that means." They're so young and don't know Cheap Trick.
Who's Cheap Trick?
Yeah. Right. Who is that?
I've seen them 9 times.
Oh, have you really?
I've seen them in concert 9 times.
Yeah. You know, I'm not a huge fan of live albums in general, but their Live at Budokan is like one of the greats, and like Pulse from Pink Floyd. Those are like 2 great live albums that I can listen to over and over. But I wanted to ask you to start off. So what is a meme to you? Like, you know, it communicates an idea, but why is that so important? You've kind of really started to have this following based on your memes.
Memes are cave paintings were memes. Memes are ways to communicate in a very prompt, but it has to have edge to it. And edge is a bad word. We don't want to be edgy, but when I think of a meme, I think of war propaganda.
Sure.
War propaganda posters or memes. One of my favorite is from the Revolutionary War. It's the snake cut into different parts, and it says "join or die."
Right. Thomas Jefferson.
That's a very classic meme. Martin Luther nailing the 95 theses to the door, think it was the Wittenberg, the church in Wittenberg, Germany.
Right.
That was an incredible meme. It changed the course of Western history, changed literacy, for all time. So, basically a meme is it's just a message to put out there to get in somebody's face and, hopefully make them take notice.
Sure. Yeah. So more of, it could be an action as well. Just something that synthesizes all of these ideas into one provocative, like performance. I almost see it as like a performance art where I think that art and entertainment are the ways that you change culture. And, you know, you have to change culture to change politics. And we certainly need to change the politics, in this country and in the world. And I think that, that's such a great way to do it. And you see comedians do it all the time. Often they're on the left, but it changes people's minds.
Well, Andrew Breitbart famously said, and it's one of the best quotes, that, politics is downstream from culture. Culture is always influencing politics. And right now, the culture, and like you talked about, media or, Hollywood, they're in control. Their far left progressivism is in control, and it's influencing culture. Culture gets influenced, that influences politics. So that's why we've seen this, radical shift to the left. It was a few years ago. That was like, conservatives were like, no on gay marriage. Gays are not allowed to get married. Mm-hmm. Now it's not even an issue. It's gone right by them. Mm-hmm. The far left, and I don't have any problem with gay marriage. Libertarians have been advocating for gay marriage since the 70s. Right. I just, the government shouldn't be involved in marriage.
Right, at all.
That's the thing I have a problem with marriage. I don't care who gets married. But, as far as the left gets to, as long as the left gets to influence culture, we're going to go in that direction.
Yeah.
And conservatives are not going to influence culture. They have no culture whatsoever. They have no culture of their own. I mean, gun culture is not a culture. It's not something you're going to have movies written about it. You're not going to see anything like that unless it's in a very negative light. But libertarians can, with a culture of freedom, with a culture of leave people the hell alone, we can do that. We can influence culture.
Yeah.
So I think we have a much better chance of conservatives of ever going after the progressive leftist culture.
Yeah, they certainly seem to have, in Sal Alinsky's work, they've been able to really synthesize themselves into this cohesive unit, even though they may not even, I'm speaking of the left, the far left, they may not even agree with each other or like each other very much, but they show up for each other because they realize, like Sal Alinsky said, that, the idea or the issue is never the issue. The revolution is always the issue. And so they're out to get that revolution of social change, which sort of leads me to your book title with The Kids Are Not All Right, a meme-inspired primer on encroaching Marxism in the West. And I know that there's that term cultural Marxism that has been going around, and I think you've talked on that a little. Could you kind of explain to us what cultural Marxism is to you?
Well, yeah, it's not a term that I'm particularly enamored with. I think I only use it in the book once or twice. It's really caught on because Ron Paul uses it. Ron Paul uses it a lot. Mm-hmm. And, with the respect that he generates, people really go with it. I call it, it's fascism to me. It's, people want to make the argument that, it's classic Marxism. Well, it is, but, fascism and Marxism are just brothers. I won't say the brothers are cousins. Mm-hmm. You're still looking to centralize. You're still looking to control thought. You're still looking to put down, to suppress any kind of opinion that is different than, the prevailing opinion of those who have, who hold the guns. Mm-hmm. And, I think when you look at who's influencing this culture that you see coming off of college campuses that are anti-free speech, have this insane obsession with fascism, that to the point where they don't realize when they're doing it, that where they're blind to it, not realizing that, the government that we have with so much of the regulations, points towards fascism itself, but they're not, they seem to be more worried about, being misgendered or having, things like, getting triggered and safe spaces and microaggressions, things like that, where they don't see how business is being centralized, how the government centralizes business, all this talk of Trump saying we need fair trade and, not realizing exactly what that means that's a leftist, that's a progressive leftist term that he's using, that he's trying to co-opt, but I'm sorry, you can't co-opt it. It's on every frigging candy bar at the fair trade is on every frigging candy bar at the checkout line at Whole Foods talking about fair trade.
Right. I don't think he understands it. That's part of the problem.
Well, he's woefully ignorant. He's so worried about a trade war and everything, not realizing that in the 90s, they said the same rhetoric that I've dealt with today online, mm-hmm. about how China's dictating our economic policy. The same arguments were made about Japan when Japan was leveling insane tariffs against the United States in the 90s. And it sent Japan, who at that time was on the top of the world, and pretty much everything here was made in Japan.
Yeah.
Well, guess what happened? It went, their tariffs sent them, you know, trying to use language here and right. trying to be nice, but,
you can use whatever language you feel appropriate. Yeah.
I mean, it completely fucked their economy. Yeah. And now it's like, you know, at a time when you saw almost everything that I had, electronic thing that I had in my house was made in Japan. Now it's all being made in China.
Yeah.
And if China is leveling the kind of tariffs that most of these people say they are, but no, they don't know that they're actually leveling these tariffs. They just know what they're being told on TV. They can't tell you what's being, you know, what tariffs on what's this, what the percentage is. And, you know, they never have, it's only, well, we have to start a trade war because, mm-hmm. or my favorite, you know, we have to start a trade war so that we can have a free market.
We have to suspend free market principles in order to protect the free market.
Of course. I mean, of course. And, you know, and I was in a private room on Facebook today. Not a lot of people are in there. And someone was making that argument, and Gene Epstein of Barron's, of the,
brilliant
the Barron's
guy.
Family and, the Soho Forum, you know, stepped in and said, listen to what you're saying. And, you know, and I'm basically just parroting what, you know, somebody who's a lot smarter and been studying economics a whole lot longer than I have.
Yeah.
You know, that it's, you have to, he made the point. He said that about individuals. He said, if China decided they wanted to send everything here for free, and if I thought that that was bad for me, I could say, no, I don't want any of your free stuff. But for me to say you can't have, you know, you standing over there, you can't take any of that free stuff, I don't have the right to say that.
Yeah, it's a tyranny.
And the point needs to be made on things like trade. And I'm sorry, we were talking about cultural Marxism, and I went into trade. Because, you know, I think it's all fascism, and economics is huge in fascism.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes down to it. An individual trades with another individual, and nobody else besides those two individuals should have any say in it.
Sure.
You know, and if one side doesn't want to put it, if one side doesn't want to charge extra in the trade, but the other side wants to charge extra, if it's only two individuals, one side can say, we're going to have to renegotiate this. But if one side decides, you know, and it goes back to Misesian human action, if the side that's getting charged extra decides, well, it's in my best interest that I want this, even though on paper it may look like to an outsider that I'm getting the worst of the deal, I still want this.
Right.
You know, but to bring this all back is the government getting involved in trade is what these people, you know, is a sign of fascism. And this is what these people, you know, should really be worrying about, or the wars overseas, which is the easiest thing for a college kid to, you know, to get into. I mean, historically, but no, they're worried about being misgendered, and they're worried about like the two trans people on campus, you know, being called a certain thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's my problem.
Just this morning, I was talking with our mutual friend, Alan Mosley of the Gold Standard podcast, about just that thing. And we were talking in terms of business, that we really get frustrated with businesses. Like recently the head of, I can't remember the company, but he was eating Chick-fil-A, and all the progressives were upset with him for eating Chick-fil-A during Pride Month. How dare you? And I said, instead of apologizing, I get so frustrated with them for apologizing for these things, because they have every right to eat at Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A has every right to close on Sunday and to be Christian and all that. And, you know, you have every right not to support them if you don't want to. But it's not saying that someone is evil for eating Chick-fil-A during Pride Month, because all Christians hate gays, apparently. Like, it's so their naivete and their immature look at the world, that no one is multifaceted. Everyone, you put them in a box, and that's where they are. And if they don't agree with you, they're outside your box and therefore evil. And that's the same thing they hate that a lot of conservative Christians seem to do to them. And, you know, just the fact that they're apologizing and they're pandering to the smallest common denominator. Whereas a business, you should say, look, our job is not to play culture wars with you. Our job is to sell to the most amount of people that we can. And we're not going to apologize for not for doing something that's not wrong. And do you ever just feel like that frustration where you just want to smack people when they apologize for things and go out of their way to placate like the smallest group possible?
Yeah, it was Jack from Twitter, the CEO of Twitter, that actually did that. Okay. And I mean, it makes sense. I mean, Twitter is you can't even get, I don't even know if you can get a check mark on Twitter now unless you're a progressive.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care how much verification you can go through, but, you know, in the beginning, Twitter, getting your check mark on Twitter was about being able to verify that your identity, and that you were important to the conversation, that you were an industry, you know, you were doing something in entertainment, whatever. And, you know, now it's all about ideology. And I'm not surprised that Jack did that because, I mean, he's pandering to the progressives.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, it's, and it just goes to show how economically illiterate everybody is, you know, if you don't agree with the business practices of a company, just don't deal with them.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there are, I really can't think of any off the top of my head that I go out of my way to not do business with, but I'm sure there are some that, and it's probably more, I just don't like like their business practices as a consumer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, that's the way I choose to do it. I don't really get ideological. I mean, I still watch TV shows and I still watch movies that have, you know, these people that are preaching progressivism in it. And I try not to let it bother me because, I mean, I just don't really, you know, it's whatever.
Because you're not so delicate that you can't hear something that you don't like. Like this is where I really have a problem with, like, I have a lot of friends who are liberals and I love them, but don't nag me because you're offended about something. If it doesn't offend me, I don't give a crap what you think about it. Like, okay, so you, that offends you and okay, fine. Don't do it, but I'm not bad because it doesn't offend me. Like I don't feel the need to be offended for everyone in the world. Let people do what they want and they're offended. That's their problem. But, you know, a lot of times if something just offends me, I'm like, click, turn it off, move on. Like, I don't need to make a, you know, have a rally about it and march down the street. So I just get so tired of that delicacy. Like, you know, no one can take care of themselves, that we are a collective and we have to protect the weakest among us. And then all it does is end up making everyone so weak that they can't go through life.
Everybody wants to be in a group. Everybody wants to put people into a group. And that's one of the problems with the social justice warriors and the kids on campus is they're not learning to be individuals. They're learning to be groups and that they're learning that there are certain groups that are historically oppressed. And then, you know, white people, you know, unless, you know, are the enemy, unless, of course, they go out of their way to virtue signal and make apologies like Jack on Twitter, you know, Jack from Twitter did. You know, I had someone on Twitter yesterday, a black gentleman who claims he lives in Harlem in New York. And he was going after me because I was talking about individuality and, you know, and that I was this white guy from the South. And I happened to mention to him that I'm actually, you know, my dad's Puerto Rican and I'm from the Bronx. I'm from right over the bridge from you. And he told me, no, I was lying.
Right.
Because I couldn't possibly be from there unless I sought to identify myself with the group.
Right.
You know, and, you know, I mean, they don't, it's a sickness. It's an illness.
Yeah.
It really is. It's, yeah, you know, you want to say, I like to say stuff like, you know, we want to say stuff like this country in its original founding and its original, you know, minarchism, was founded on individuality. And to a certain extent it was, to a certain extent it wasn't. I mean, there was all sorts of problems, but you know, it was an experiment. But, I mean, we've come way, and here's the sad part is, you know, it's not only the progressives that are playing that group thing. Now it's people in the alt-right who are like, the alt-right, for example, who, you know, I tell them collectivism is cancer and, you know, and then they tell me, well, when when the Muslim hordes come for me.
Right.
And I'll, okay. I mean, I live right outside of Atlanta, and I have enough guns to, I have enough guns to outfit my whole neighborhood, and most of the people in my neighborhood do too.
Yeah.
It's going to be a real problem. Oh, but where do you live? Oh, you live in New York. That's right. You've been disarmed.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe you should move.
Yeah. That's one of the things that we get upset about here in the South. and we've often talked about amongst ourselves is that, you know, Yankees, being everyone outside the South, they ruin where they're at with their progressive politics. And then they move here and want to ruin it too. They don't leave the bad stuff behind. They complain about all the bad stuff that are results of their politics. But then they move here and they want the same things. And it's really frustrating. Not that there aren't things in the South that are their own problem, but you know, they never seem to take any personal responsibility about this. It's somebody else did it to me, and I didn't have any hand in this, even though I voted for so and so, and they were supposed to do this. And there's never any like real accountability. Like maybe, you know, maybe we should try something different. Nobody wants to do that. And you know, I what you said about being from the Bronx and being part Puerto Rican. My grandmother was Creek. And so, I mean, I'm a white chick. Like I look white completely, but she was Creek. And so I was saying to someone, I just need to get my little card and from the tribe, the Machis Creek, and be able to, you know, I want to wear like full Indian regalia somewhere and get, you know, nannied and finger shaked at by some leftist and just pull that out. Like, you don't know who I am. Like, you don't. Why do you think that anyone owns these things? And why do you think that you have the right to be offended for someone else and to tell me how to dress? Like, all of these things that you claim to hate and you want to tolerate people, but you, not really. It's about control.
Well, I mean, it would be very easy for me to, you know, if I wanted to prove to people that I'm, that I'm half Puerto Rican, because all they have to do is look at my legal name. You know, I don't use my legal name because of insane leftists out there who, you know, are doxing idiots and,
yes,
you know, will seek to come after me. And I work for a rather large company that is, has those stupid, you know, it makes you have to watch those stupid training videos and all that crap. And, you know, you never know what they're going to do, even though I'm a valuable employee. But it, you know, it, you're,
yeah,
no one's, you know, the companies get rid of CEOs nowadays, and you easily prove that, you know, I was raised in a very poor neighborhood, and that I, you know, that I'm quote unquote a minority, but it doesn't matter because I'm not preaching their,
right,
you know, their manifesto, you know, their manifesto of victimhood and, you know, well, I have to apologize for the half of me that's, you know, that's Eastern European.
Right.
And, you know, so, these people are insane. These people are insane. And I don't, you know, I had, my latest episode of my podcast had Ian Miles Chung on there. And Ian writes for the Daily Caller. He lives over in Singapore, and he, you know, he's a gamer. He writes on gaming and on culture, and he is great to talk to about, you know, the subject of my book, because like a couple of years ago when Gamergate was going on and it really started bringing all of this to the forefront, he was in SJW at the time. You know, he was a social justice warrior at the time. He was on the social justice side of gaming. So, you know, and then, you know, it took him some time, but he got out of it and he realized just exactly how insane it was. And now, I mean, he's Minarchist getting ready to go MCAP. All I got to do
he's
is
on
talk
the six
to him
month plan,
more, you know,
the 6 month plan,
yeah,
to anarchy.
So, but, yeah, but you know, what's funny is when he was a social justice warrior, you know, he was a minority. You know, his family's from China, and you know, he lives in Singapore. But as soon as he stopped being a social justice warrior, I think Tariq Nasheed called him a Nazi.
Wow.
You know, so it's, I mean, you know, it's just, I'm, And these people, they're out of their mind.
Yeah,
and if you don't bow to them, you know, and Michael Malice calls them the evangelical left.
Yes.
Because they're very evangelical. It's just like Christianity. If you do not accept, Jesus Christ as your savior, you cannot be saved. If you do not accept the fact that that anyone to the right of us has an evil ideology, and anyone who looks at individual over group, and if you don't think that every oppressed minority, well, and if you're in the sacrament of global warming or any of that stuff, then you're
evil.
You're a pariah.
And you must be disposed of. Oh. And I think this is where people don't see that, you know, in Germany, say, the greatest example, where they eventually started killing Jews. So I think this is what people forget, is that they didn't start out on day one, let's kill the Jews, let's send them to the gas chambers. It was the disposability of people, objectifying them so that they're not us. They are other. And so therefore their lives have no value or meaning. So this is actually the road that I think they're on. Now, I don't know whether we'll go that far, but when you can say, well, they're a Republican, so their lives are meaningless, or they're a Democrat or whatever, or that they don't agree with, you know, everything that I agree with, all of the progressivism or all of the ultra conservatism, that it's so easy to put those people outside of your group. And I love Dr. Jonathan Haidt's work on the righteous mind, how good people are divided on politics and religion. And it is an amazing book. And I've read it like 3 times now. And one of the things that he says is belief binds and blinds. So it binds people together, but it also blinds them to certain aspects of issues within that community. And I know that, you know, kind of moving along a little bit, one of the things that you have been sort of hammering away at on Twitter and Facebook has been this kind of cult of personality. And that's what is surrounding Dr. Jordan Peterson. And, you know, just to kind of look at ourselves as well and say, we can't then do the things that we think other people are crazy for doing, like worshiping people. But you've been really hammering away at the cult around Jordan Peterson. So if you'd like to say a little bit about that and talk about the kind of cult of personality that builds up around people.
Well, I mean, I actually like Dr. Peterson a lot. His book is his book's amazing. My wife loved his book. My wife read it cover to cover. And what he's done for, you know, free speech, going after these people,
yeah,
you know, who want him to use pronouns. You know, it all started with, no, I'm not going to use these pronouns. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing what he's done. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, he has changed a lot of people's lives. A lot of people were having serious personal problems. I've heard stories of soldiers who've come home from Afghanistan and they don't want to leave their room and they're just, you know, they feel like life really isn't worth living and they're just existing. And they'll start watching a couple of his videos and then getting a YouTube, you know, go down a YouTube hole, watching his videos and, pull their lives back, you know, put their lives back in order. And I love all of that. And I can understand why, if he did that for you, you would want to, you would want to defend him as much as possible, but I'm an individualist and just as many, if not more people who are watching his videos, they're not helping. You know, they're not helping everybody. If it's helping you, that's fine. Putting somebody up, putting one individual up on a pedestal, you know, doesn't make sense to me. It's not logical. Mm-hmm. My Twitter handle is at MN Rothbard, Murray and Rothbard. Rothbard is, you know, one of my heroes. He's the reason why I believe a lot of the stuff that I do, but I don't agree with him on everything. I mean, I vehemently disagree with him on a lot of things, especially towards the end of his life.
Yeah.
You know, some of the views he held towards the end of his life and, you know, just, you know, little things here and there. But, you know, for the most part, I think that anyone who reads Anatomy of a State, For a New Liberty, What Has the Government Done to Our Money, books like that, they're going to, you know, if they're ready, it'll change their lives.
Yeah.
But, you know, that cult of personality, holding up one person to like they're doing, like some people are doing with Dr. Peterson is just really dangerous.
Yeah.
And I put up a critique meme the other day that I can't even remember what it is. But immediately one of the first comments was, oh, so Mance is a Marxist now.
Right.
And it's like, that is cult-like behavior.
Right.
That is the thing that people in cults will do. Yeah. Another thing is they will get mad. I mean, they will, you know, I had one guy on Facebook who just got, you know, he was like, you could tell he was just typing furiously. And, you know, and because I had, you know, I had mentioned, you know, how cult-like it was. And, you know, he basically shot back with, it's not a cult. And I'm like, you just proved my point.
Thank you. Yeah.
I mean, you're upset because I'm criticizing a person.
Right.
You are like losing your shit. And it's not like you've just explained to me exactly why, you know, like how really, you know, you really need to look at his stuff. If you look at what he did here, I'll link a couple videos. You could really see that he's speaking to a lot of people and that he's talking about some real change in the society.
Yeah.
No, it's just anger.
Right.
You know, and that's not, I'm not convinced by anger. I'm convinced by facts.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's very odd to me. You know, I mean, you could see there's a cult like, following around Ben Shapiro.
Yes.
Yeah, around a lot of people. I mean, you know, if you, you know, once you get to a point where you have where your podcast is getting as many downloads and listens and views on YouTube as some of these people are getting, it has to be cult-like.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like Tom Woods. I don't miss an episode of Tom Woods, but some of the episodes I'm just,
right.
I shut off after five minutes because I just have no, you know, this doesn't interest me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to listen. I'm not listening just because it's Tom Woods. It has to be something that's very interesting.
Right.
And I love, and if you hear this, Tom, you know, I love you. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's busy people.
Yeah,
we got to ration our time.
Right. And that no one person can champion every cause for you. No one person is going to be right. I've talked to people many times, in a particular group that we're on, both of us are on Facebook and, you know, the anarchists, they love Jordan Peterson, and people would complain about, but he didn't say this, you know, he talked about this in economics and he's just wrong. And I'm going to stop listening to him. And I'm like, dude, don't do that. He's not a politician. You're not listening to him for politics. You've got that. Like, you don't need that. The stuff he's saying is good. Like, some of the stuff is really, really helpful to people, like you were saying. And so don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. He's not pushing, you know, this Marxist agenda. His politics are his own. Recognize that everyone is multifaceted and no one is going to be exactly the perfect person for every cause that you have. Like, I just don't get that mentality. And, I'm not saying I'm above it, but it seems so logical to me that why would you care what his politics are? He's made this huge stand. He's also helped so many people. I mean, I have a 15-year-old son, so I have really appreciated the kinds of advice, particularly for males, that has been given to my son. And I have seen this huge change in him. He started watching Jordan Peterson videos and just his desire to be more responsible in his life. And he's already a really responsible kid. But his desire to really become an adult has been amazing. And I've loved watching that. And Jordan Peterson has helped him a lot. And I think he's saying some great things about that everyone in our society needs to hear about men and how they're being marginalized. And that's not a knock on women. Like that, you know, the people that always want to jump to the opposite extreme when you say anything contrary to their belief, like the lady that interviewed him, I forget her name, that just, yeah. So you think women are dumb, you know, basically, because he's saying things about men that men need to hear and that women need to hear. And, but that still doesn't make him perfect. It still doesn't make him worthy of worship. And then on the other side, you see sort of this cult of personality in the anti-camp is what I notice a lot, where I've seen it with Tom Woods as well, that you have people who've never listened to an episode calling him a racist. And I'm saying if you can listen to one episode or all of his work and call him a racist, I'd love to know what you're talking about, because I've listened to a lot of Tom Woods stuff. I've read a lot of his books. He's not a racist. So, just like Jordan Peterson, they make this sort of their life's ambition and their goal of their work is to knock him down. So I think it's just such a dangerous thing to do in society and have these beliefs that are unwavering and that you can never change. It's not like a principle that you want to stick to, because it's the right thing and no matter what the crowd is doing. It's a belief that should be able to be changed when more facts are presented. But do you think people even want to do that, to change and to actually grow into something better?
I don't think people set out to want to change. I think that people just change. I mean, I don't know what it was in 2007 when I heard Ron Paul speak, especially about foreign policy. I think the reason why I took to it so easily was because I had been questioning foreign policy for a long time.
Sure.
It didn't make any sense to me that, you know, Saudi Arabia wasn't going to pay for 9/11, considering, you know, overwhelming majority of the hijackers came from Saudi Arabia. It absolutely made no sense to me. And finally, when I heard, you know, when I heard Ron Paul talk, and then I started investigating, you know, things like, what were Osama bin Laden's gripes before 9/11, things that he had written before 9/11, things like that, then, a lot of the foreign policy things, foreign policy made sense to me, and I realized, you know, we need to leave those people alone to do whatever they want to do, just like we want to be left alone to do whatever we want to do. What was the question again?
Just about, you know, people changing and
yeah. I mean, it was, you know, I don't know what makes people change. And when I've asked people why they've changed their mind, more often than not, the reason that they changed their mind is they look and they see that there's an injustice that's being done that they didn't see before. And, you know, that was like the, you know, to me, it was the injustice of, you know, United States foreign policy that made me, change my mind. I think that, from everything talking to Ian Miles Chung, why did he stop being a social justice warrior? It is because he saw that, there was an injustice was being done to people who had done nothing wrong. And, you know, I think the easiest way to help people to realize, you know, to help people to change, or to, you know, if you point out injustices to people, I think that people are naturally drawn towards wanting to repair injustices. Mm-hmm. You know, and if it's a real injustice, if an individual is actually being hurt, or if a group of individuals is actually being hurt, I think most people can see it. You know, my problem with people like the social justice warriors, again, is they say that groups are being hurt, but they can't point to it, show me the individual within the group that's being hurt. You know, if you tell me, if someone comes to me and says transgender people are being, you know, there's persecution against them, I don't know what to do with that information. It's very vague. Mm-hmm. But if you tell me this transgender person had this happen to them, I will gladly go to bat for this person. I will gladly, you know, do whatever I can. And if it's something local, I will help however I can. I'm not one into activism. I'm not going to go and march or anything like that, but I will go to that person and help emotionally, financially, however I can. Protection. If somebody needs protection, tell me where to go.
Right.
They want to take the power of the state to, you know, if one person in a marginalized group is hurt or injured, or God forbid the worst happens to them, they think the state should step in and, you know, pass all of these sweeping laws for, you know, less than 1% of the population.
Right.
And they don't understand that whenever you say there ought to be a law, all that does is give the state another excuse to point a gun at you.
Yeah. The laws are a web. They're meant to entrap people. They're not meant to keep the government that may. They're meant to entrap people. And you see that all the time where they have these laws and you're like, why is that a law? But when they pull you over for a traffic stop and they can do a million new things to you that they couldn't do before because you didn't know you weren't legally obligated to let them search the car, and then they can rack up the charges and therefore the revenue. That's all it is. It's to catch us. And I think, you know, you see a lot of the same sort of things on the right and the left. Like the social justice warrior, when I think of that, I don't just think of the left. There's a lot of that on the right where, you know, they didn't do what we want, so we want the government to take care of it. And you think about the vague statements of like transgender people are being abused. It's the same with terrorism. Like, what does that mean? It's just a way for the political elite and for the politically active to manipulate and mold society in the way that they would want it. And it's all about using that proxy force, because they don't want to come and do it to you. They want the state to come and do it to you, because it's okay to shoot my neighbor as long as I don't do it. If the state does it, I need the state to shoot my neighbor for me. So I think it sort of all leads to that violence.
Which is completely illogical, because it's like, oh, I can't shoot my neighbor, but I'm going to give them, somebody else, the right to do it.
Right.
It doesn't make it. I mean, if you don't have the right to do it, you can't give the right, pass the right to somebody else.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
That's one of the most basic and it's really like the first 3 days of my first book is just basically talking about, if you don't have the right to do something, you can't pass it on to give that right to somebody else. So I've just basically in the first 3 days destroyed destroyed the government, any governing authority.
Yeah.
It's illegitimate. It's illogical. Now we'll spend another 28 days just, I'll friggin' hammer it into you until you can't friggin' take it anymore.
Yeah, it's like that.
Yeah, I mean, literally, that makes no friggin' sense. I don't like what my neighbor's doing. So I'll get a law passed so that somebody can punish him for it.
Yeah.
Well, if you can't punish them for it, you can't tell somebody else to punish them.
Right.
What the hell's wrong with you people?
Doesn't, you know, wave a magic wand and it's all of a sudden okay because someone else did it, but they did it on your behalf.
Like, well, yeah, and they put on a Halloween costume and a tin piece of metal, right, and they carried a gun, and then they took an oath. They said some words. What? That's what? So?
Yeah.
So I'll do that right now.
Yeah.
Well, no, but you're not being sanctioned by the state. Well,
yeah.
Who's the state? The state's just a bunch of people. How do they have rights that you don't?
Yeah.
How'd you give them rights you don't have? It's, yeah. it, it, It makes no sense.
The people lacking the basic understanding of the delegated powers that, they say states' rights. Well, states don't have rights. They have delegated powers. Individuals have rights, and you can only delegate those rights which you have. So every state that acts outside of a power and that I would not have, they're not representing me. So there's no representation there, with the state. It's all about force. It's not governance. It's force. Because if you are, I see governance as, a community getting together and figuring out, okay, so we all want roads, right? Let's figure out how we're going to do this. The state being the force that's behind it says, no, we're going to do roads and you're going to pay for it. And it doesn't matter what you want. It doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter if you want to pay for it or if you can or not. You're going to do it. Or we're going to come and put you in the rape cage. We're going to come and beat you up in front of your children and shoot your dog. Like there's this understanding of that I am the one that holds those rights and that I delegate those things that you the state has no rights in and of itself. It doesn't have a right to tax you or to come and put you in jail. They don't have that right. So I don't know if there's actually a question there, but it just moves along.
It doesn't always have to be a question.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of answers.
Yeah. Speaking of, though, I just read an article recently that I loved. It was from the ACLU.
Oh, I thought I wrote it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I didn't see that one, but about this lady who it was hundreds of miles inside the border, and ICE, the people, they the Border Patrol boarded this Greyhound bus, and this lady who happened to know her rights stood up and said to the other people, do not let them search this bus. They don't have the right to ask you where you're going and what you're doing and how you got here. And then she used Google Translate to translate it into Spanish so that Spanish people would hear it. And the freaking agents left the bus. She kept saying, no, we're not doing this. Like, I love that. I mean, that's a real hero. That's somebody who understands her rights and made sure that everyone was protected there by knowing them and backed those fuckers down. Like, they've already made a law that says you have no Fourth Amendment rights within it's 100 miles of the border. That's been around since, the 50s or something? It's been a thing. So apparently, they've legalized not having the constitutional rights there. But this woman who just knows the Constitution, she's not an anarchist. She backed them down by knowing something. And I just think that's so important for all of us to kind of stand up for ourselves and for each other.
Well, she understands the three most important things when you're dealing with the state. Don't ever talk to the police. Don't ever talk to the police and don't ever talk to the police.
Yes.
Don't ever talk to the police. Yeah. I mean, they're not there to help you. They are there to find information so that they can, any information that they can find so that they can initiate conflict with you. I mean, that's it. I mean, don't ever talk to the police. And this is the big problem is I don't like calling the police. I like calling them the government because people,
yeah,
think because the police are local and they may know a couple of them, though that's a good guy over there. Really? You go to work with him? You see what he does?
Mm-hmm.
You know he's a good guy. He's never violated anyone's rights. You know he's never gone beyond what he should. And have you ever looked at the job that he does? These people cannot divorce themselves from the local police. Like I've even heard people talk about FBI and the CIA,
right,
and ICE and DEA, how horrible and how unconstitutional they are. Yeah, but the guy who lives next door who puts on that uniform and goes to work every day, that's the standing army that the founders told you to don't have.
Right.
Don't have a standing army. Well, yeah. I mean, they're literally no different than the redcoats in the time of the founders.
Yeah.
The redcoats were the police. They were code enforcement officers. I mean, the fact that they're not boarding, you know, the fact that the police aren't being, you know, you're not forced to lodge them, you know, or to, you know, to house them in your house like the colonists had to, doesn't mean that they're any less intrusive upon your rights.
Yeah.
And do not talk to the local police. Please stop respecting these people.
Mm-hmm.
They do not have a constitutional mandate to protect you. Warren versus
right.
District of Columbia. They show up to
yeah.
stop crimes less than 5% of the time. And it's even smaller. It's a minuscule amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So be your own cop.
Yeah.
People ask me, you know, I've had people, you know, I've had people online say, oh, you know, only, you know, you carry a gun with you everywhere you go. You know, that's a sign of a coward. I'm like, I'm my own cop. The cops are not going to be there if somebody initiates, you know, if a criminal, if somebody who wants to violate my person or property, you know, initiates conflict with me, well, what do I do? I call 911. Most of those instances are over in 10
yeah.
or 20 seconds and they end in violence.
Yeah.
And look at the language I just used, initiated conflict.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you're probably going to have a better chance of having a peace officer do that with you than you will a criminal in your life.
Yeah.
And they can shoot you and get away with
right.
it.
Walk away scot-free. Keep
yeah.
your job.
I mean, yeah. But what happened before the camera was turned on? But why didn't you just listen to him and obey?
Right.
The kind of shit we tell people who are in hostage situations, not people mm-hmm. who are supposed to live in a free country.
Right. Yeah.
What kind of fucking horse shit is that, man? I mean, what the fuck is wrong with you people?
Yeah.
That you would give up your fucking rights, that a cop can walk up to you. You're just walking down the street and they come up to you and say, stop. And you have to stop.
Right.
You think that's for your safety? That's for your fucking control.
Yeah.
Fucking idiots.
I know. I think it's amazing that, you know, they justify the murder of people. Like, I'm sorry, I can't remember the gentleman's name right now. The black man that was basically suffocated to death outside of that store for selling cigarettes, loose cigarettes.
Well,
like he deserved that for selling some cigarettes. Like, not paying the tax, man.
I actually wrote about him in my first book. Eric Garner.
Eric Garner,
I wrote about him in my first book, and I said that, you know, people don't get killed over taxes. Yeah, they do. He was killed over taxes.
Yeah.
And then cop suckers, the people who fucking support the cops, held a rally for the cops.
Yeah.
Where they wore shirts that said, I can
right.
breathe, to mock him.
That was terrible.
Fuck you. If you're a fan of the cops, fuck you.
Yeah, and that's where I got, like, cops are historians. They show up after the fact to write insurance paperwork reports. Everything that they do before the fact, a crime hasn't been committed, for one. And they, like you said, they don't often stop them. When they do stop crimes, it's happenstance. Like, they just happen to be close by and see something going on. And even then, they don't always stop them. But, like, I think about the situation out in, was it Utah or Arizona, where the man was shot from his hotel, you know, he came out of his hotel and crawling towards them. And the guy had, you know, you're fucked written on the side of his gun.
Etched into the dust cover of his
head. Yeah. And we're not allowed to question the mentality of people who are supposed to be servants, who have you're fucked written on the side of them, their guns. Like, they're not servants.
And that's the only reason he lost his job.
Yeah.
He was going to keep his job.
Mm-hmm.
Except the only reason was they made, you know, a bunch of people made a big deal out of the fact that he had your fucked written on the dust cover
right.
of his AR-15. I mean, and he walked away scot-free. Why did he walk away scot-free? Because when they had an expert come in to talk about the fact that he followed exact police procedure, that expert was the same person who teaches them the procedure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Scott Horton says, when you go into a courtroom, everyone in there, the lawyers, public defender and prosecutor, the judge, everyone who works in that courtroom is a cop. They all get paid from the same fund. It all comes from the same place. They all work. They all work for work for the government.
The deck is public stacked against you.
Public defender. People are like, oh, that's my public defender. Think about the name public defender. He's not defending you. You're not the public. Yeah. He's defending the public from you.
Right.
He's defending you. He's defending the public from you because you're seen as a danger.
Right.
But you trust that person. You trust that person to be, you know, it's like, and they're an officer of the court. And if you look at their literature, their first oath is to the court. It is not to you. You know, their first loyalty is to the court. It is not to you.
Yeah.
It is a fucked up system. And you know, the late Harry Brown, you know, always talked about, said, if you're going to live in a society that's not free, you have to make yourself absolutely as free as possible. And one of the ways he talked about it, the main way he talked about it, was as getting rich as possible.
Yeah.
Because laws don't apply to rich people.
That's true. Yeah. And they can hire their own private lawyers that defend actually them. That crimes, I always remind people of this, that when you commit a crime, it's not a crime against the person. It's a crime against the state. That's who prosecutes. And I've even known of cases where the family of the supposed aggressor didn't want the prosecution, but they did it anyways because you've committed a crime against them. And often it's just that their authority has been questioned in some way, and they have to make sure that you know who the boss is, that you know who's in control of you. And all of those things are set up to be against you. Like, the monopoly on the court and monopoly on the law is a bad problem in this country. It's a bad problem everywhere where there's that kind of marriage of the law and the force that goes behind it. Because if any police officer, say the man that murdered the guy in the hallway, the state has no, the courts, being the state, has a conflict of interest in prosecuting an agent of the state, because they're saying you did wrong. So either way, the state gets blamed. There's no party that's not got an interest in this thing working to the state's advantage. So I think people have never really thought about these things. And it's trying to get them around to those points of view where they can just start to understand it. Like, that's my main goal, is how do I communicate to people, have this conversation, but how do I get to the next conversation? How do I build credibility with them? How do I get them to come talk to me about these things? Because I don't want this to keep happening. We're such a small number of people, like libertarians in general, and then people like us on the anarchist sphere of that are just a very small percentage of the population. How do we get ourselves into the mainstream to talk to people? And I think, you know, people like the 10th Amendment Center, they've done a great job. Michael Bolden out there has done a great job of speaking their own language to them, that constitutional language. So how am I as an anarchist going to be able to communicate that and get outside the bubble and communicate that to people? So I don't know. I think your books are a good way to do that, because it's entertainment. Anything that can be broached as entertainment isn't threatening to my ideology, but often I think it actually ends up changing minds. So I did, as an homage to your meme greatness, I have here some, I don't know if you can see that. It's a pineapple on pizza chips that I thought that was such a great, because I am one of those heathens that loves pineapple on pizza. And you had a meme about that. And I don't know if it was actually yours or if you just reshared it, but I saw it on your page.
Yeah.
And
it's what's funny is I am such a troll that one day I will put a pro pineapple pizza meme out there, and then the next day I'll put an anti pineapple meme pizza. And just wait, just look to see if anybody's going to comment. Wait a minute, didn't you just have? Aren't you contradicting? It's like, I don't really eat pizza much anymore, but I've had pineapple pizza before, and it tasted good to me. It was fine. It was fine, you know.
I love it.
You know, and whatever, you know, and of course it's just a joke. We don't care. you know, with our ideology, we don't give a crap what other people eat. You know, they could eat whatever the hell they want. But it's so funny to see people because, you know, it's almost like if you throw the anti-pineapple on pizza joke out there, people just come in with all these canned responses that are really hilarious.
Yeah. You know? So it's always fun. We like to argue. So it gives us something to argue about that's not actually serious.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, in arguing, if it's done in the proper way, it really helps to, it really helps you, you know, like yeah. a knife sharpening stone. A stone sharpening a knife. It's very important. But of course, you know, arguing with people who don't, I mean, I was having a discussion with somebody, tried to have a discussion with somebody today about, you know, the China trade policy and everything. And when they answered my comment, they came back with, you know, and basically the whole point of my comment was individuals, trade, government should, you know, if the government gets involved, it really starts messing things up. So, you know, individuals should decide what's the best trade for them. Sure. And they came back with just, I mean, collectivist language and, we, government, United States, this, and I just quoted that back. We, what does this have to do with me? And immediately they came back and they wanted to sort of keep the subject, but the first thing that they did was came back with, I bought your book. I got through the first half a chapter and then I put it down. It's like, okay, so what does that have to do? I didn't talk in the first chapter of that book. I didn't talk about China trade policy. I didn't talk about trade policy at all. So right. what does that have to do with what we're talking about? I mean, I can. Do you want me to go through your Facebook profile and look at pictures of you and make comments on what you look like? I mean, is that an argument?
Right.
Is that an argument? I mean, what is that going to have to do with China, with trade policy? What is that going to have to do with, you know, laissez-faire? And people are just, you know, some people you just can't have they're not ready to have a conversation.
I think that's more it.
You know, I will gladly, you know, leave those people alone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can tell online pretty quick if somebody engages you, whether they're engaging you seriously or not.
Yeah.
And the sad part is most of the time when you're online, if somebody engages you, they're not trying to engage you seriously. They're, you know, looking to insult you or, you know, just contradict you for contradiction's sake, but don't have a logical argument to go along with it. And, you know, so sometimes it's very hard, you know, and I want to, if somebody's really serious, I want to talk to them. But, sometimes you have to weed through some real garbage in order to find those people. That's why one of the reasons on Twitter, I leave my email, my direct message open so that anybody can, direct message me so that, you know, if they're really serious about something, then, you know, they can direct message me because normally, you can only direct message people who follow you. So, mm-hmm. you know, but just a lot of people just don't want to argue. A lot of people don't want to have reasoned debates. They want to have, you know, they just want to tell you how evil you are. Yeah. How evil your ideology is because you want babies to starve in the street.
Right. Yeah. And what's so funny to me is, I was just having a conversation recently about how you can tell people haven't thought up these things on their own, right? Like there's the joke within our community of, well, why don't you just move to Somalia? You know, we've heard it, like we've actually heard those words. Our taxes are the price we pay for a civilized society. It's out there. Yeah. So they're not thinking on their own. They're not reasoning through these things. No. They're just picking up lines.
Yeah, they want me to move to the People's Republic of Somalia.
Right, exactly. Why would I
trade one oppressive government for an even more oppressive government? Oh, you think there's no government over there? That's because you're so well read.
Right.
That's because you're so well read to not realize that there's been a government there for a long time. Oh, and by the way, the CIA is arming and training Ethiopian troops to go over the border and kill Somalis. So if I went there, I'd probably become the victim of U.S. foreign policy. And, you know, I mean, I'm taking my chances enough here with domestic policy and these fucking police.
Right.
I don't want to go over there and have to deal with drones with bombs just dropping out of the sky. You know, if I happen to go to the grocery school, I go to church or a wedding or something.
Right. Yeah. I think most people, they see the police as heroes, the government, the state, the military as heroes until they have an interaction with them. And once you've had an interaction with them, I was 12 years old when we came home to find, seven police cars in our yard, and they arrested my stepfather, didn't read him his rights, never said anything. They just took him away and accused him of murder and his twin brother. It was only like a day long thing. Thank God he got out of it. But, he was accused of something that he clearly hadn't done, but they had decided that he fit the profile and he had the right, whatever, some kind of evidence had led them to him. And, he could disprove everything, but they didn't care about it. They didn't even tell him until he had been there for hours and hours and hours what he was actually being charged with. So, they're at 12 years old, I learned a lesson. It didn't really kick in until much later in my life, but I look back on that and saw how you don't have any rights when it comes down to the police. Right at that moment, the only right you have is the right to obey them. Anything else they can do to you to get you to comply and obey. And so, there was nothing he could have done or said. They were taking him. So that armed gang came to my house and took my stepfather. They didn't have to prove that he had done anything. They didn't have to have a warrant. They just came and got him. And, I think that's why we have to be so savvy around that whole system.
He must have done something wrong.
Right.
He must have done something wrong.
Yeah.
The cops just don't roll up on innocent people.
Right.
Isn't this the excuses we hear from these people?
Yes.
The cops just don't roll up on innocent people.
If he had just done what he was told, he wouldn't have gotten shot. Well, how about the man that was in the car with his 2-year-old and did what he was told and still got shot? I mean, that's what's so ridiculous about it is that they are not heroes. They're doing their job, okay? They're not there to protect you. They're to protect the state. And to get that point across to people, if you say anything critical of the police at all, they want to just say, well, they're all heroes. No job is like that. Everybody's good at their job.
Well, yeah, no one's perfect. Well, who has to be perfect? Airline pilots.
Right.
Airline pilots have to be perfect. Because if they fuck up, they hit a mountain.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, and, how often do we hear about airline pilots hitting mountains? It is not very often anymore. I don't know if it's technology. And technology is what's going to, basically technology is what's going to solve this police problem. I don't know who the hell they're recruiting. I doubt any kind of test. But I mean, they're not getting the best.
Yeah,
they're getting people that want a government job. That's what they're getting. They're getting people that want a government job that can work for 20, 30 years, get a retirement. I mean, that's what you're getting. You're getting the same mentality of the people who go to the who get a job at the DMV or get a job at the post office. That's it.
There's been several write-ups of people who have tried to get into the police force and their IQs were too high. They don't want people that are smart enough to reason out. They want people who are, I hate to say that, they're dumb enough to just do what they're told, but smart enough to be able to carry it out, but not so smart that they actually question the morality of it. So there are several instances where people didn't get hired because their IQ was too high. I had Brian Ellison, he's running for an office in Michigan under the Libertarian Party, talk about that. He tried to get on the police force because he was so upset with them that he wanted to get on the force and kind of, you know, show that he could do a better job as a Libertarian than they could. And of course, he couldn't get on because his IQ was too high. He had too many anti-authoritarian.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's... You know, I heard Michael Malice say it, and I mean, how can you say it any better? I mean, think about the quality of individual that desires a job where you're basically your whole job is to raise your voice to other adults and rifle through their private belongings.
Yeah.
And mind you, if you're listening to this right now and you're thinking, well, they have a right to rifle through those private belongings. Well, those belongings aren't private then. Then you have no expectation of privacy.
Yeah.
Oh, well, the laws have been, those laws are violating constitutional rights. All these people who want to talk about the Constitution and how the Constitution, I saw someone online the other day say the Constitution stops the government from doing bad stuff. I'm like, show me the proof of that.
Right. It actually gives them the right to do it.
It's a piece of paper and it's never stopped the government from getting bigger.
Yeah. People with guns stop the government.
Think about it. You know, the Constitution's a watchdog. Well, if the Constitution's a watchdog, whose job is it? The watchdog is basically watching itself. And the government, who has the time to, stand outside their local government, their local government office to make sure that these people are following the letter of the law?
Yeah.
They just do whatever the hell they want. And you continue, and by continuing to vote and by continuing to put out that myth out there that voting changes things and that, if we just vote, I mean, come on. This isn't hard stuff, people. This is stuff that you should be able to look at, calculate and go, this doesn't seem right. I don't think this, there's something wrong here. There's something very wrong here.
Yeah. Well, before we get out of here, I know I could keep going on about, you mentioned the CIA in Africa a few minutes ago, and that's a whole rabbit hole that can be discussed. But I wanted to give you the opportunity to, we mentioned the Free Man Beyond the Wall, your podcast, and you also mentioned Scott Horton a few minutes ago, and I listened to your episode on Oklahoma City with him, and that was fantastic. I just loved it, and it's something that, happened when I was a teenager, and so I didn't really think about the narrative, what was going on, but over the years, as I've learned more about it, it's so shady. It's just so shady. And Scott has just such a wealth of information about that, that I thought that was such a great episode, and I really encourage people to go over and watch your podcast or listen to it.
Episode 95 is Scott Horton talking about the Oklahoma City bombing and all of the stuff that was hidden from you. I mean, think about this. It was the worst terrorist attack in United States history up until that point, and they never did a Senate hearing on it.
Yeah.
They never investigated it, and they told you that two people did it when there was so much more evidence out there that it was multiple people. I was lucky enough to have Scott, who's very good on Oklahoma City, talk about it. And then I was lucky enough to have Dan Gifford talk about Waco. And all the lies that have been told about Waco, about how they burned their own house down, that they were a suicide cult. The children were getting raped in there. Nobody even knows that the ATF had undercover agents that were in there before all this happened, who said, there's nothing going on in there.
Right.
They're a little weird, But right. But for the most part, no one's getting hurt, and they don't have any illegal guns. Yeah. We went shooting with them. Yeah, and but that's one of the things I try to do with my podcast is I want to talk to people who, you know, not conspiratorial. There's nothing conspiracy minded in any of those. You can look up all these facts and everything. The one thing I hate though is I want to do an episode on Ruby Ridge.
Yes.
But the real expert on Ruby Ridge, and I'd have to look up his name right now, but he died. Mm-hmm. And
that's one of my favorite. I just, as a mother, I get so angry that, you know, they would shoot a woman holding a baby. They would shoot a young man, 14 years old, in the back. They didn't give a shit about these people. They weren't doing anything. They had no fucking business being there whatsoever.
Government agents do not care about you. Yeah. They are going to go home at night. So, yeah. You know, like my podcast, you know, two episodes ago, the episode I released on Wednesday had Bob Murphy on. And all I did for an hour was feed him economic fallacies and let him destroy them. So check out his Free Man Beyond the Wall. I just released episode 119 yesterday, with Ian Miles Chung talking about social justice warrior culture. My website, freemanbeyondthewall.com, has my episodes on there. It actually has a link to another podcast host because I moved all my episodes off my website onto a separate host. And, it also has my store on the website. My books, Freedom Through Memedom and The Kids Are Not All Right are available on Amazon. Okay. You can use regular good old fiat, bad old fiat money there. But if you go to my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com/store, you can buy my books only for cryptocurrency.
Okay.
I accept 8 different kinds of cryptocurrency on there and I'll get it mailed out to you really quick. If you want me to, you know, if you want me to sign it, tell me how you want me to sign it. I think there's a lot of people, there are a lot of good people out there now who are preaching a message of freedom, of liberty, of self-reliance, of self-ownership. And, you know, I just want to be one of them. I want to help. This coming next year in February, I'll be talking at Liberty Forum in New Hampshire.
Oh, cool.
So I'll be traveling up there to visit the Free Staters and, just trying to get the message out that, you know, I know that it's hard for a lot of people to understand that we don't need the government and that we can do things on our own. And I can, if those people want to talk to me, I will even grant them that we need the government for basic, very basic things. Just talk, just learn, read my books, read the first book. I mean, the first Freedom Through Memedom is everything that I'm talking about as far as taking ownership and, taking ownership and just how the government is not there to protect your rights and that it's really illegitimate in the way that it's set up now. So, check out the podcast, check out the books and, it was a great talk. I haven't gotten this angry on a podcast in a while, even my own.
That's good. We could have gone more into the police. It's been, you know, I used to do a radio show and we did, like we could have done an hour and a half a day on just new cop stories every day. Like this is how pervasive it is. It's not a small problem in this country. People only look at their communities and think that it's not that big a problem. It's a big problem.
And I said this a few years ago, before I jumped back, I took a bunch of years off of promoting liberty and I was doing some private stuff. And when I came back in, there was a lot of talk about, the police were killing a lot of black people. They were, shooting people in the back, killing kids. I mean, they were going into black neighborhoods, neighborhoods they don't live in, neighborhoods they have no skin in the game whatsoever in. And I said this to everybody I was in contact with at the time. I said, this is just the beginning. I said, watch in a couple years, this is going to start happening. So in every neighborhood, it's going to start happening. It's a white people.
And that's when it's a problem.
They're going to start killing. And what happened? They started doing it. I mean, all you have to do is go to Free Thought Project is one of the best websites to go for, because they are watching the cops on a daily basis and reporting on all those stories that you're not hearing about in the news. And if you look at those stories, man, they're slamming right down the middle with, the majority of the people, if 50% of the people are black, that's still the majority, considering they're only 13% of the population. So that's still still overwhelmingly bad. But, there's a lot, you're going to learn that they don't see color anymore when it comes to tyranny.
Yeah.
And when it comes to, basically outright murder, they do not, or rape now.
Yeah.
That's their favorite thing, to rape with their fingers. To rape people on the side of the road with their fingers looking for drugs.
Right.
Until it happens to your mom or your wife, you're probably not going to care, because hey, those are good guys. I actually know a cop. He's a good guy.
Right.
We've been in a picnic together. He's a good guy. Right. He told me to call him if I ever have any problems.
Right. Yeah, I feel that, because my best friend of 27 years is a police officer. He became one a few years ago, and it tears me, because on a personal level, I know he is a good person. But as a cop, he's not, because there are no good cops, because there aren't cops standing up and saying that this is wrong, what's happening. They're protecting themselves. The thin blue line is about them. It's not about keeping bad guys from you. It's about them being protected from you, from everyone else.
What do all the cop defenders say? That's just a couple of bad apples.
Right.
Well, what is that?
They're the good apples.
What does that term come from?
A few bad apples spoils
the whole bunch.
Yeah.
And if it's just a few bad apples and the overwhelming majority of them are good apples, how come they can't drive the bad apples out?
Right.
Why do they protect them?
Yeah. Why do they lie for them? Yeah. I just talked to someone yesterday who said that there's a local sheriff that we're going to try and get on. He's involved in the Libertarian Party around here. He was a sheriff's deputy, and he arrested the sheriff for something. And of course, he's not a police officer anymore.
Of course not.
Because he was a good cop, so he's not a cop anymore. That's the problem. When you actually stand up for people and you actually stand up for their rights, you won't be a cop for long, because they're not in it to protect your rights. They're in it to protect themselves and their organization and their power in the community. So, we could keep going with this. I know it's been over an hour, but I did have one last question for
you.
Sure,
go ahead. Yeah, no
problem. And I know you have answered this on another podcast, and I just wanted to get it from you again.
I am not going to answer this question. I'm not talking about my wiener.
No. You knew what it was. Yes. Well, I your answer was a little vague for me, because you talked about eating a hot dog. And that whole conversation was very homoerotic. I have to say, I was listening to it with Alan here. Alan Mosley of the Gold Standard Podcast is visiting me for a few days. And we were listening to it together. And he asked you, is a hot dog a sandwich? And then the homoeroticism just kept rolling. I was dying. I just, because that's where my brain goes all the time. But,
Is a hot dog a sandwich? Not to me, because I don't eat buns.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't make it. It has to close. I don't consider a Subway sub a sandwich either. Because to me, a sandwich is the bread is cut all the way through and then it's closed down on it.
Uh-huh.
If you have one side that's still closed.
It's a taco.
Yeah, I would actually say that a hot dog is closer to a sub.
That's very interesting. And I know, like, for me, the hot dog is a sausage. The hot dog bun is what you put the sausage in. That doesn't make it a sandwich. The hot dog, when people say, I want a hot dog, they may mean the hot dog sandwich. But that to me, if you ask, is a hot dog a sandwich? Well, no, a hot dog is a hot dog. It's a piece of sausage.
And I mean, and this whole thing is purposely phallic anyway. Yeah. So.
Right. Maybe that's why I'm drawn to it, like a moth to flame.
I was saying, you know, a lot of people, unless you're from the North, a lot of people might not know this, but you know, is a Kanisha sandwich.
Yeah. Or a pierogi. They're very good. All right.
The Eastern European part of my family is talking.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
With those.
We grew up eating tomato sandwiches. You know, a tomato with mayonnaise and bread. And I grew up poor as well. So I have eaten a popcorn sandwich and, you know, it's interesting. And I have eaten, like, most everything was on white bread. So hamburgers, hot dog. We didn't buy hot dog buns. Are you kidding me? We bought white bread and put it on there, and you fold it in half. Like, that's what you do. You wrap it around. So anyways, well, thank you, Vance, for coming on. And I sure appreciate you being a good sport. And it was great to talk to you finally and get to hear your perspective on some of these things. So thank you so much.
Yep. No problem. Thank you for putting up with my rants.
No problem. Thanks. Take care.
All right. Bye now.